The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Tomorrow, good afternoon. 7 minutes after 12 midday. Plans to launch the new cashless pay system for parking at the airport have been delayed. Infrastructure Minister says the current bus timetable is unsustainable. Isle of Man Transport is 9 drivers short. And there are 14 cancelled bus services today. Any thoughts on the matter? Text, email or call. The big news is the results of an employment tribunal which found the island's former medical director was unfairly sacked has damaged confidence in government. Who said? Alfred Cannon, the chief minister, says so. This morning delivered a statement to Tynwald on the dismissal of Dr. Rosalind Ranson. Mr. Cannon was unable to discuss aspects of the tribunal's findings in detail, but took the opportunity to announce a series of reforms to ensure better accountability and departmental performances. It includes a review of the chief secretary and that of the HR division.
Government is too big and unwieldy. Operations in government must now be annexed into the appropriate structures to bring about proper governance and transparency. The Council of Ministers will bring forward further proposals on this in October. Mr. President, I acknowledge our failings. We need to make changes to government. Structural changes, cultural changes, and organisational changes, because we cannot retain the status quo. And we need to do it now to ensure that the public are getting the best possible outcomes and delivery. I recognise, of course, that so many public servants do so much to deliver the very best in public services. But there have now been too many issues over the years to feel comfortable. We must now all take responsibility. Change will not happen overnight, but we must start and we must move with urgency. The Council of Ministers are determined to ensure that change does happen. Today I am laying out foundations. There is more to come. Delivering will not be easy, but I know and believe that with effort and determination, the government and its staff can strive to become a more focused, professional and streamlined organisation.
That was the Chief Minister this morning. Phil Gorn, who presents Agenda and Perspective, the two political programmes on Manx Radio, is with us. We're going to be thumbing through what's been said this morning inside Tynwald. But Bonzo's first on Man in Line. Hi, Bonzo.
Oh, hi there. And hi there, Phil. Listening to the Chief Minister's statement, I suppose I should not be surprised. It doesn't stop me being, I think the word I would use is appalled by it. It was a plethora of platitudes that really just pointed the way to the usual kind of delaying tactics that you use to kick these things down the road. Oh, we'll have a review. Oh, we'll We'll examine this. We'll look into that. Where is the action today? He said in that introduction that you played that, you know, this was something that needed to be addressed with urgency. Where's the urgency? Nowhere to be seen. And in previous things where I think Minister Ashford and others have said, no, it's not going to be about circling the wagons. The Chief Minister's statement is going to be about addressing the issues and insofar as is possible under sub judice. And this is another point, because actually, as Phil will know, the definition of sub judice used by Tynwald is different to the one used in Westminster and also to the one used more generally in journalism. So that change, I believe, came in 2007. So to that extent, to that extent, the actual standing orders of Tynwald helped to limit questioning, which is something that I think Tyndall members need to re-examine. But then going on to these supposed measures, etc. Oh, and also in the issue of sub judice, employing the president of Tyndall pretty much as a human shield to avoid answering difficult questions. I'm afraid I'm disappointed in the president in that he seems to have permitted himself to be misused in this way. As for the future and what needs to be done, I don't think anyone can have an atom of confidence in Cannon and other members of Comin. There are some members of Comin who are competent, who are able, who do have principles, but I'm afraid the majority of them would seem to wish to follow in with Cannon and Ashford's line of hanging together or we'll all hang separately. It's just not acceptable.
So, I mean, what about the concept of cabinet government, the concept of, you know, a team within government? Does that not hold any sway with you?
It depends if that team is operating as the civil service sometimes say of itself, that its role is to pursue the policy of the government of the day within the law. Now, it would seem in various issues, the pursuance of policy by civil servants and thence by ministers instructing them by the text of by the conclusions of the ransom decision would imply that there is a possibility that those things were not performed according to the law.
Okay. All right, Bonzo, we appreciate that. Thanks for being with us.
Okay, thanks.
Good to talk to you. Phil Gorn with us on Man in Line today. Phil, what were your feelings? How did you feel when you heard what the Chief Minister had to say this morning?
There were some very interesting omissions, I think, from what the Chief Minister had to say. Certainly what he did say, things like too much top-down management, not enough bottom-up problem-solving and listening. I think everyone would agree with that. Although Mr. Cannon perhaps has been accused of top-down management himself in the past. Mr. Cannon referred to the government needing to return to the SAVE programme, which apparently cost more than it saved, according to certain sources. But again, I mean, I can't imagine DHSC is going to be part of the SAVE programme, so I'm not entirely sure whether that's not just some kind of a smokescreen. Some of the comments of the members, Mr. Watterson described the former chief executive of the Department of Health and Social Care as a megalomaniac, which is quite a thing for the Speaker of the House of Keys to say. If he was aware of that and he was sitting outside of government, surely to goodness the likes of the Chief Minister and certainly David Ashford, former Health Minister, they should have been aware that this was the general perception. So it's quite surprising. And certainly in relation to the Chief Secretary's departure, the Chief Minister had this to say: in light of the early retirement of the Chief Secretary, I'm taking the opportunity to review its position. An update will follow in October. Nothing about thanks to the Chief Secretary for sterling service over the years. There are rumours swirling around the corridors of power. I've certainly heard it from at least three MHKs that the Chief Secretary decided to jump before he was pushed. Whether there's any truth in that, only time will tell.
Well, there was a wholly unexpected early retirement.
It was, certainly, and it's not the first wholly unexpected early retirement of a senior officer in government. And maybe that's what the public actually want to see from the leadership in Council of Ministers.
Okay, all right, let's just go to Howard now. Howard, you're on now. What do you make of all this?
Well, I didn't actually hear the programme, but reading about the various aspects of it. Phil Garner's right there. We've had senior members of various departments, and I mean top of the heap, DOI and various other places like that, the NHS, well, it's the DHSC, whatever they call themselves. And now we have the secretary. Now, there's an awful lot of people jumping ship. So what is happening within government, and not so much, but what has happened? There's been an awful lot of cover-ups. Now, I had a great deal of faith in David Ashford, but this now spells disaster for that man. And Alf Cannon, who was part of the Civil Service Commission many years ago, he is also very susceptible to the heavy hand of the public.
And it's worth saying, Howard, that David Ashford topped the poll in Douglas North, got 44% of the vote.
So he got
an MBE for his performance during the pandemic.
Well, yeah, that's fine. David Christian got an MBE for his performance in Douglas Corporation, and look at what happened recently. It's fallen apart. But MBEs, it's what you do on the ground and what you do for the people. You can have all the medals you want. They're handed out like confetti these days. But David Ashford, he did receive very high polling, but you have to be ultra careful when you're walking on a very tight rope, because one slip and you are down, and that unfortunately is what happened to this man now. And he is being dragged down by the chief executive, or whatever you call her, and working not on the island but working off the island. And in the future, Alf Cannon or anybody who is in power should say, if you are coming in here in governance to a government body, any part of it, you should be resident on the island. But the question I ask, and I feel extremely sorry for Dr. Ransom, she has had all sorts of abuse. Now, she is going to be entitled to compensation. Who is going to pay this compensation? Are they going to sue Magnuson, whatever her name is, or the general public who have suffered enough? Are they going to have to pay for it through their taxes?
Phil, who would you say?
Well, it's a very interesting question, and ultimately it will be the taxpayer, won't it? But certainly, the surprising omission from the Chief Minister was when he was asked by both Tim Glover. Tim Glover said, how can government bring forward this forward when one member of Council of Ministers is part of the story? Daphne Kane suggesting that she was angry and incredulous, wondering where the apology was. No apology from the Chief Minister, either for his role or indeed for the failings of government. And Claire Christian, I think, went even further and said, she asked the Chief Minister, has he got confidence in former DHSC Minister Ashford, David Ashford, now the Treasury Minister? Did David Ashford mislead Tynwald? She also asked, had he confidence in the Director of Public Health? To which Mr. Cannon, the Chief Minister, replied, we're getting on with delivering for the people of this island. No statement of confidence, no backing of his minister, which is, to say the least, surprising.
What do you make of that, Howard?
Not surprising, because a lot of these political speeches are written by the civil servants, and they're covering their backs. Now, I remember, I know it's going back a long while, but when the gas problems arose and they had the protests outside Tynwald, I was there with them. And I can't remember Perkins' name, is the other Laxey man. He came out and he had a ready scripted speech, and he didn't deviate one letter from that. But that self-same man afterwards, after I'd been speaking to him down there, he found out who I was and turned up at my house. Now, that speaks volumes of what is going on. They're all covering each other's backs within government. And it's a disgraceful situation. They are there to protect the people, not to protect themselves. And they close ranks. And this is exactly what Alf Cannon's doing now, closing ranks and making excuses, again, excuses. But that compensation should be from the Magson or whatever her name is. That should be from her and from the top civil servants, not the public. We were not guilty. They have been found guilty.
Okay. All right. Howard, thanks for calling. Appreciate that. It's worth bearing in mind that it was the BMA that funded Rosalind Ranson's legal support. Her union, the BMA, funded all that. So presumably they're the ones who want their money back, Phil Gorn.
Yes, I would imagine so. And unfortunately, I mean, Howard perhaps is right that it wasn't the public's fault. But unfortunately, the public, every 5 years, have the opportunity to decide who is going to represent them. And their public representatives then make certain decisions using public money on behalf of the public. So this is clearly going to be an issue that will, if it comes to it, and it certainly looked very likely when you look at the findings of the Industrial Tribunal, that compensation will have to be paid, that this will come from taxpayers' money.
OK, Julian, you're live now. Hi, Julian.
Hi, Andy, and hi, Phil.
Hi.
Looking at the accountability of what we're talking about right now, Dewan yesterday brought up a very important point, and I just wanted to add to what he said. He was talking about a new treaty that's going on in the background at the moment. Effectively, what's happening is there are two components to this. It goes back to a 2005 WHO Executive Board implementation of a legal framework called the International Health Regulations, which is legally binding on the 194 WHO member countries, which includes the UK. And at the moment, these regulations are still allowing national governments, which I assume is also the Isle of Man, to abstain from any kind of measures that the WHO recommend, like lockdowns or masking or whatever, which is what all this thing in Timwald is talking about and how that worked out. Thing is, next week, between the 22nd and the 28th, the WHO are going to vote to amend 13 articles of the current regulations that I think we are part of. One of them is Article 12, and it's going to allow the WHO and the WHO Director General the power to declare a public health emergency in any of the member countries, even over the objections of the member country. So even if we don't want to do it, I'm going to get to the point about the Isle of Man, we will have signed up to that. And also in Article 9 that's going to be amended, if it's amended, they're going to rely on undisclosed sources to declare a health emergency if necessary. Now, on top of this existing legislation, which we are at the moment, there's a new drafting of this new pandemic treaty, which is being called the International Treaty on Pandemic Prevention, Preparedness and Response. But crucially, that is going to massively increase the power and scope of that previous regulation that we're currently under. And that will allow the WHO to mandate measures such as vaccines, passports, vaccinations, lockdowns in the name of biosecurity. So there's going to be a brief window of public consultation next month on the 16th and 17th, but only on the details of that treaty and not whether it's warranted or not. And basically, Boris Johnson, on March the 30th in Rome at the Global Health Summit, along with 24 other of the member WHO countries, have backed this new treaty, along with the creation of a network of global surveillance hubs to spot emerging diseases. And some of the details of this draft treaty that's going through are financial incentives for countries who report potential outbreaks, along with financial punishments for countries that won't comply in the form of embargoes and sanctions, etc.
It's interesting, Julian, because hitherto the WHO has been more of an advisory body than a mandatory body. So what do you read into this?
Well, it seems that next week they will vote to have the power to enforce lockdowns despite the objection of any of the member countries. There will be a window of 6 months, which will be November, where any of those member countries can reject it. And if they don't lodge a complaint within that 6 months, they will be deemed as being accepting of the whole thing. So as of the end of next week, the rule changes are quietly going to change. And this new draft treaty, the new one that's going to go on top of this, will then allow them to directly control all the other bits that fall into place with that, like mandating lockdowns, et cetera, et cetera. That draft is expected to be completed in its form for consideration in August this year. So when we're talking about accountability, what I'm getting at is, if the Isle of Man decides to go along with this, if we have the ability at the moment not to, if anything is told to be done, and whichever side of the fence you're on about whether you approve of lockdowns or not, they say, well, I'm sorry, but the WHO, speak to them, because they're the ones that are telling us to do this. Okay. So we're going to have our, well, effectively, I don't even see that your human rights can be taken like this in the first place, but also, of course, your constitutional right to self-governance is effectively being removed, okay, from what I can see.
All right. All right, Julian, we appreciate that. Thanks for bringing that to our attention. Thanks for calling.
Thanks very much.
All right, it's 28 minutes past 12. Phil, do you think this whole Rosalind Ransom case would have happened if we hadn't been in a pandemic?
I'm pretty sure that it's hard to know, I suppose, isn't it? It wouldn't have been highlighted.
Unprecedented circumstances.
It is unprecedented circumstances. But of course, what we also have to go back to is, you had the election in 2016. You had 12 brand new members of the House of Keys. Of the remainder in the House of Keys, only two had more than 5 years' experience. They then elected a year or so later a very inexperienced Legislative Council, and part of the problem here appears to be relatively inexperienced people being put into fairly important roles without the experience of backbenchers. I mean, the likes of Eddie Lowy comes to mind. I mean, Eddie was always fantastic at making the blatantly obvious to people. He would cut through the civil service nonsense and say, "Look, Minister, this is a very clear thing and you should be sorting this." I can't imagine that had Eddie Lowy or the likes of Eddie Lowy still been in Tynwald over the course of the last 5 years, that the minister would have been able to stick to his position, which was apparently he only speaks to the chief executive. He doesn't speak to the person that government pays well over £100,000 a year to give him the best possible advice on health matters.
And the role of backbenchers and the perpetual stone in everybody's shoe, Peter Caron, people who were there. Some people said, as a perpetual troublemaker, somebody who was the thorn in everybody's side. He was an equal opportunity thorn.
Indeed. And actually, again, going back to the questions on the Chief Minister's statement, what surprised me was there were only two or three members who were bold enough even to sort of skirt around the issue about David Ashford's position. Now, don't get me wrong, David Ashford is probably amongst the top two ministers in terms of competence and capability at the moment. He's in my estimation, from what I've seen so far in his role as Treasury Minister, he's been doing a really good job. So it's not a case of his capacity and capability as a minister in terms of where he is at the moment. However, there's a very serious issue that's arisen here. He was the minister. It's clear from both what was said on the Perspective programme on Sunday by department member that the department were fully aware that Dr. Ransom was being silenced. It's clear that ministers were fully aware that Dr. Ransom was being silenced. And it is also clear that Minister Ashford was unwilling to speak to Dr. Ashford. And now that in itself is, I mean, at the very least, David Ashford should have been doing was offering his resignation to the Chief Minister. Whether the Chief Minister then chose to accept that or not would be a matter for him. But it does put a stain, unfortunately, on David Ashford, this whole affair.
Chris Thomas, MHK, has called for David Ashford to resign, now Treasury Minister, former Health Minister. So it wasn't long before today an MHK addressed the matter. Douglas South MHK Claire Christian welcomed the Chief Minister's swift and prompt comments, saying, "We need to shake this tree once and for all for bad apples." Claire Christian then asked if Mr Cannon has confidence in Mr Ashford and whether Mr Ashford has misled Tynwald.
As I said to you, with regards to the Minister and the Ministers, we are getting on with delivering for the people of this island. We are facing a substantial cost of living crisis, and it's important that we roll out the right, appropriate approach in order to support our people through what is going to be the most challenging of times. The Treasury Minister has already brought forward a package of support appropriate to the rise in energy and fuel bills. And I can tell you now that as a council, we are continuing to consider how best we can support our people on this island through the forthcoming months, which clearly are going to present substantial challenges.
If you've got a thought on this, text 166177, email studio at manxradio.com, call 66 1368. Phil Gorm, former minister, former MHK, is with us. I don't know, maybe you've got a thought on what Phil was talking about, that maybe the rhythm of the elections, maybe the cycle of elections has brought this about by an inexperienced Keyes electing an inexperienced Legco, put them up against very experienced civil servants, and what do you get? Text, email or call Man in Line. Oh, and as well,
the service has been good for the last couple of years, and, you know, while we've had the drivers, now we haven't got the drivers, I would say it's unsustainable at the moment while we're in this position. We are looking to sort out some of the services and maybe cut a few services while we're running short.
14 bus services not running today.
In our quest to remove all single-use plastic from our milk packaging, Isle of Man Creamery cartons, including the new 1.75-litre carton, are now 100% recyclable, made from sustainable and renewable sources. We're the first in the British Isles to offer these new large cartons, and you can pick them up now in local retailers or add them to your Isle of Man Creamery doorstep delivery. Plant-based cartons from Isle of Man Creamery. Better for the environment, better for you.
I didn't know where to turn to protect me and my children from my violent husband.
My partner verbally abused me, controlled how much money I could spend and who I could talk to.
But my advocate was compassionate and helped me with the police to stop the abuse.
My advocate helped me to get a court order to protect me and stay in my home.
If you need assistance, call Advocate Smith Torbitts Unsworth Limited on 677-888 or email reception at advocates.co.im.
Don't miss the Kane and Wicker Furniture range in store at Miller Chaps of Ramsey, including sofas and chairs, dining sets and coffee and side tables, with designs featuring quality frames, beautiful fabrics, comfortable fully sprung seats with leather binding and a huge range of window blinds to complement. Discover exclusive Kane and Wicker furniture now at Miller Chaps.
Creating a home where you'll love to be. Miller Chaps of Ramsey.
This TT, Villa Gaiety are here to entertain you with some of the best names in music and comedy. Milton Jones, ELO Experience, Craig David presents TS5, DCAC, Pigs on the Wing, and the Steve Gibbons Band. Plus, the Bushies TT Village is back with live music, food, drink, and a great atmosphere. Visit villagaiety.com/TT or call 600-555 for details. Villa Gaiety, the island's premier entertainment venue.
So, what are you doing Friday morning from 9:30? If the answer is not much, come down to the Shore Shop on Strand Street and join in with Mark Tiley in the morning. That's me. Because we are going to bring the Friday Flutter to the store, and we've got TT Racers in there as well. Plus, all the latest info on all the new products available at Shore Telecom in Strand Street. I'll see you there, 9:30, the Shore Shop, Strand Street, Douglas, this Friday.
The Morning Show, brought to you by Shore, with a variety of plans to choose from to suit all budgets. The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Pastor Mai, Man in Line's on till 1 today, and Mike's with us. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Andy. Hi, Phil. Mike Birchall from the Secretary of the Isle of Man United Taxi Branch. I'd like to talk about public transport, two different sectors. Firstly, bus banning, and secondly, Mr. Allenton's comments about the taxi trade yesterday.
Yeah.
So if you could bear with me for both of those. So services cut over the weekend, I believe it was 80, and yet they had buses down on Peel Harbour on Sunday covering private hire work off the cruise ships. Tours Isle of Man, I know for a fact, had coaches available that could have covered the cruise ship work that day. So it could have been with a bit of communication, it could have been covered. But it goes back to bus vanning, competing with the private sector and trying to get the more lucrative work instead of concentrating on the services that they should be providing to the public, as far as I'm concerned. And we can liken that to what they've been doing with the taxi trade, with the dialer rides and the Connect Port service, certainly. There's no way that they should have been competing with us running buses from minibuses on order from Ramsey to the airport to compete with the taxi trade. So they're trying to hone in on the more lucrative work rather than providing the service that they should be providing. So Tim Cruckle mentioned this morning as well that they've got a shortage of workers there at the moment. One, because of COVID, and two, I think he said it was 8 or 9 people that hadn't been replaced. They hadn't been able to find staff. So we have to ask ourselves, why haven't they been able to replace those people? Driving a bus going back 15, 20 years ago, it used to be dead man shoes. You couldn't get in unless somebody had retired. That was the situation. So why is it different now? Well, the employees down there, we have 3 different working contracts down at the bus company. We have the original ones. I'm not going to mention any figures. We have the original ones where they get their set rate Monday to Friday and they have to work their roster Monday to Friday. And if they work the weekends, they get an overtime rate, which is fair enough. So then Mr. Longworth decided he was going to try and cut the costs. He thought, we'll bring in a second contract here, and eventually got it through. He got it past the unions, etc. And he cut the rate of pay to below what the Monday to Friday rate was. And he said, right, you're not getting any extra for working the weekends either. But the roster, as far as I'm aware, was still, they only had to work Monday and Friday. Weekends were optional. So the boys on that tariff, they said, well, we're not working the weekends for no more money than we get Monday to Friday. So then we ended up with Mr. Longworth himself, people from the office, management, out driving buses at the weekend on the lucrative rate because they couldn't staff the bus service at the weekend. They didn't have the staff to do it. Nobody wanted to do it apart from the original boys on the original contracts. So then he had to scratch his head again and think again. So we brought in a third tariff, which is slightly higher than the second tariff. But now they have to work any 5 out of 7, so if they have to sit in a bus at the weekend. So my point is, if they'd left it the way it was, it would still be dead man's shoes. Everybody would get a fair rate. There wouldn't be any animosity within the drivers. You've got 3 different rates of pay down there. You've got the ones on the good pay, the ones on the low pay, and the ones on the medium pay. So that must create envy, if you like, within the workforce as well. There was just no need for that. That was a mistake in itself. If you hadn't changed it, it wouldn't have happened. That was my point regarding that. The other thing I'd like to sort of bring up, nothing to do with the lack of public transport, but Mr. Longworth derailed a tram at Dream Skerry last year and seriously injured his partner. I've not been able to find anything about an inquiry into this or any report of an inquiry. I'd just like to know if any of your listeners know anything about this. Was there an inquiry? If so, where is it online? Bearing in mind that if a bus driver, the likes of the one a couple of years ago up at Birch Hill, his bus rolled off the road, rolled into a house, I believe, or off the road anyway, and he got dismissed and he won an unfair dismissal tribunal and got reinstated. But, you know, it seems to be one rule for one rule for the other. That's my thing about the buses. I don't know if you've got any comments to make on that, Andy, or Phil.
No, we're running short of time, so if you could briefly just mention the taxes.
Right. Okay. Well, Mr. Allison mentioned yesterday that he would ask the airport taxi drivers to return to work, and as many of them to get out as possible. The problem with the airport at the moment is if Mr. Allison wishes to discuss this with me, I'm sure he could find my details. It's not a problem. But there isn't enough work coming out of that airport. There's not enough flights coming in and not enough people on them to warrant the airport taxi drivers returning to work full time. They've had to seek other work to make a living, and they can't just put their taxis back on the road for 2 weeks of the year over the TT periods. At the moment, today, for example, you've got 10 flights coming in. There's 2 and 3 hour gaps in the schedule, but over a 12-hour period, there's 10 flights coming in with approximately 600 passengers on. Two EasyJets and the rest of Logan Air with a scattering of passengers. You just can't make a living out of that. That's my point with that. So
what's going to happen over Mike? What's going to happen over TT when it's going to be full?
I don't know what's going to happen with the bus service over TT. We're all going to have to knuckle down and work the hours that we can and do what we can do. We're in a mess. The car park situation at the airport certainly hasn't helped us over the last 12 months. I myself have had 2 bookings that I've taken cancel on me within a matter of days because they've realised that the airport car park's free. They said, we're going to leave our car in the car park now. We need help to encourage people to go back and do the job, not discourage people. So we'll be happy when they're charging for the airport car park again, and we'll be happy if Bus Vannon decides to drop the Connect Port service as well.
Okay. All right, Mike, thanks for calling today. I just want to run through the services, by the way, that aren't running. Due to staff shortages, the following bus services have been cancelled. The 12:35 service 1 Lord Street to Port Erin. The 1:42 11A service Port Erin to Victoria Street. The 2:25 11 service Lord Street to Port Erin. The 2:40 Lord Street to Port Erin, service 1, that is. The 3:42 11A Port Erin to Halewood Avenue and back to Lord Street. The 5:25 service 11 Lord Street to Halewood Avenue back to Lord Street. The 5:31 service 11 Port Erin to Halewood Avenue back to Lord Street. The 5:50 service 2A Lord Street to Port Erin. The 6:11 1A service Victoria Street to Halewood Avenue. The 6:43 service 1 Halewood Avenue to Port Erin via Lord Street. 6:48 service 11 Port Erin to Halewood Avenue back to Lord Street. Then 7:30 service 11 Lord Street to Port Erin. The 4 minutes past 8 service 2A Port Erin to Victoria Street. And the 8:25 service 1 Port Erin to Victoria Street. Phil Gwan, I'm just going to ask you how much the public cares about politicians falling out with senior civil service. And whether that impacts, you've rubbed shoulders with many a voter, you've knocked on many doors. Does the public care about arguments within politicians and civil servants, or do they bother more about what is actually delivered?
They're much more interested in issues, obviously, making sure that we have an effective health service. You know, if we had had an effective health service, a really good top quality health service with no waiting lists and no problems during COVID, I suspect this may not have been as big an issue. But there are points of principle as well. I mean, going back to David Ashford, brilliant, really good minister from what I can see. He has made a fairly significant mistake here, it would appear. Is that sufficient to warrant him going? Would it not be better to have to be able to utilise his fantastic skills in government, because he is an experienced minister now, one of the few with significant experience. He's had his experience on council too. It's a difficult one, and I think it's also a difficult one for the Chief Minister, because he's ended up with having to deal with this in a very public way. I mean, he must have known that this was coming, but ultimately having to try and deal with all the questions people really want to ask and want the answers to in a public way, when you know that there are at least 2, maybe 3 other elements to the investigation still ongoing, and you can't risk saying anything wrong. I take my hat off to the Chief Minister for managing to skate his way through some fairly dangerous ice this morning.
Man in Line's on till 1 today. You can text loads and loads of emails and texts that we'll try and get through some of them between now and 1.
Discover why visitors return time after time to the Welbeck Hotel, fabulously located near Douglas Seafront. Whether enjoying our fine dining for a special occasion, bringing the family for a delicious Sunday lunch, enjoying coffee and a drink with friends, or staying overnight in our comfortable rooms, you'll never be disappointed at the highly rated Welbeck Hotel. Come and experience our excellent food and superb service for yourself. Book today. Call the Welbeck on 675 663 or visit welbeckhotel.com.
If the cost you're being quoted to sell your house are driving you crazy, it's time to see red.
CG Red is the revolutionary fee-busting service that lets you sell any properties up to £350,000 for a fixed fee of just £750. That's the lowest commission on the island. And with all the backing of Cowley Groves, the island's leading independent estate agent. Visit cgred.im now for details. Buy, sell and save when you see red!
Ethel Garage in Ballasalla is more than a Nissan authorised repair centre. Their team of highly factory-trained and experienced technicians will service and repair any make and model, with dedicated aftercare too. With Ethel, you get a competitive fixed-price menu and a courtesy car if needed. Pity this driver didn't know that.
Oh, great! I told you to go to Ethel!
Ethel, a garage to swear by, not swear at. Book now at ethel.im or call the A-team, 820082.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
And we're talking with Phil Gawne today, and you as well, if you want to get in touch about the situation that the Chief Minister addressed this morning and the follow-up to the... And obviously, Phil, a lot of this is sub judice, so we don't want to prejudice anything. But I just want to come back to what you were talking about, inexperienced politicians, and the cycle of elections maybe has brought this about. Lots of very experienced politicians, obviously people like Alan Bell, who'd been in for years, David Cretney, who'd been in for years and years and years, they all disappeared on block, didn't they? They just went.
Yeah, David Cretney and... Tim Crookle, of course, went just at the beginning. Yeah, he left Legco just at the beginning of the pandemic. So they would have had a limited influence at the start, and then they would have gone. Then you're left with Bill Henderson, who's the longest standing Tynwald member. Graeme Cregeen and Ewan Watterson both had 10 years experience, but that's not a lot when you look at the previous makeups of previous Tynwalds over the years. That's not to say that there weren't some excellent people elected into Legco and into the House of Keys, but experience in politics is something that's quite valuable in all of this, particularly when you have an emergency situation like we had.
So we come to the question of senior civil servants then, and the role that they play. Some people have said, I got the message in, this was Bruce, who just said, we seem to be paying private sector wages for public sector service. And I think I know what he means, in that if you get private sector wages in the private sector, you're held to performance targets and you can go very swiftly.
Yes, and I think it would certainly appear, I mean, again, we have to read between the lines with a lot of what's been going on in this new administration. It certainly appears that the Chief Minister is taking the view that if your name is on the door as the most senior person in that department, you have to go, unless you're the politician. There haven't been any politicians sacked as yet, but maybe it's a bit early for that to happen. But certainly two or three senior civil servants have been encouraged or found a sudden urge to wish to retire early.
Sue dropped a note in, said, if David Ashford has to resign, does it mean he'd not be an MHK anymore, or they'd just become a backbencher without a post? If Mr Ashford has to stand down from government, I think it will be a big loss, says Sue.
And I do too, but then it comes to a point of, occasionally there are points of principle, that this is something that it certainly appears from all the evidence that's been published so far that Minister Ashford had the ability to stop at an early stage. He could have intervened and could have solved this rather bizarre treatment from the previous chief executive of the DHSC to Dr. Ranson. So he had the opportunity to do something about this. He's hiding a little bit behind the government code when it comes to the roles and responsibilities of ministers and civil servants. Ministers are there effectively to provide the political leadership to the department. Chief exec is there then to manage the staff. However, if one of your senior staff who is paid by the taxpayer to provide good advice, if it's obvious to you that that senior person is being silenced by your chief exec, you really should be intervening at that point.
Okay, Eddie's with us now on Man in Line. Hi, Eddie.
Hello there.
I'm sorry, but as far as I'm concerned, I think everybody involved in this, which was a case of extreme bullying, fancy coming in and finding that your office had been emptied and you'd been put into basically a storeroom with no computer. I mean, when you read this case, it just beggars belief that they were allowed to go on and to carry on like this in this day and age, especially now in this day and age. To allow a woman to be bullied that much is disgraceful. And it must, it's not just the minister must go, the director of health must go, all of them should go.
It's absolutely
disgusting.
Okay, Eddie, but I mean, at some point, managers have to manage. And we have people who have obviously fallen out, there have been personality clashes or something. But
according to reading it, they knew, the minister knew that the bullying was going on. And that alone should be reason for his resignation. I'm sorry. And while we're on the subject, we have now got Manx Care. How many of these Manx Care directors live on the Isle of Man?
Interesting, Eddie. Thanks for calling today. Just Phil Gorn, how Manx do the civil servants have to be?
I don't think it's important, although I think, you look around most governments in most parts of the British Isles and you would expect to see a healthy dose of Scots people in Scotland and Irish people in Ireland. And it's not necessarily the case in terms of the Manx civil service. And perhaps the experience of having lived in the Isle of Man all your life might actually help in terms of managing some of these situations. But equally, we need good people who have good experience to manage these roles. And of course, the Isle of Man doesn't allow you to develop the role of running a very large department of government unless you're appointed to that role in the island. So.
For much of your political career, you're involved in nationalist politics, which involves the identity of the Isle of Man. And I'm just going to put to you, Phil Gorn, in that the identity of the Isle of Man is very important in the modern world today. Are we in danger of just becoming a bit grey or a bit vanilla by letting too many non-Manx people get into senior positions in the civil service?
I certainly hope not. And an awful lot of people I know on the island who have come to the island are really very passionate about the Isle of Man, so they get it. So I don't think you necessarily have to be Manx, in the same way as you don't necessarily have to have loads of political experience to serve in Legislative Council or the Keys. But what you do have to do is be prepared to listen to the experience and to act on some of the advice that you're given and be able to assess that. And it does appear in this case that that hasn't happened.
Interesting. Right, let's get to the lines again. And I think we've got Chris with us on Man in Line. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Andy. Hi, Mr. Gorn.
Hi.
I think it's absolutely appalling the way that Dr. Ransom's been treated. She definitely needs to be reinstated if she'd like to come back. We've lost a really good, experienced doctor and left with Ashford, Hewitt, who I'm not going to call doctor because she's truly appalling, Glover, who's in the UK, has got away with it. In the report in the newspaper, it clearly states that possibly the Abbotswood disaster would not have occurred if they'd listened to Dr. Ransom. I just think it's truly appalling. And if the other MHKs, the other 23, do not ask Ashford to leave, then they're equally as appalling. It's like Alf Cannon's report today. What a load of rubbish. He's done absolutely nothing. These people need to be sorted out. Why should we be left with such useless people when we've lost a really good doctor? I'm afraid they should be sacked. They should lose their pensions. They should lose everything. And what other deceit have they, throughout the pandemic, what other deceit has there been from these people? I don't know, Andy. I'm speechless and I'm so disappointed. If Ashford is the calibre of the ministers, then we're doomed, aren't we?
Okay, Chris, thanks for that. Phil Gawne, the Chief Minister talked about confidence and confidence in politicians, confidence in the administration, in government. Do you think we're at a turning point here?
I certainly hope so, and certainly this has been the view expressed by various MHKs, Tim Glover, Claire Christian, Chris Thomas, various others, that this is a watershed moment and some serious decisions need to be taken.
Okay, going to be an interesting perspective this Sunday. You got anything planned?
Yeah, I think so.
Tune him in every Sunday at 12 midday and every Monday at 6 o'clock. Phil Gawne with Perspective and Agenda on Manx Radio. Thanks for being in touch today. Katie said that they've trained hundreds of bus drivers, but they won't stay because of the treatment. What sort of treatment is that, Katie? Well, all sorts of stories are coming out. And if you want to get in touch, you can get in touch out of hours, maninline@manxradio.com or the answer phone on 682-631. Live from Queen's Pier on Thursday in Ramsey, but back tomorrow with another open line. Thanks to Barry Redfern producing today.
WINT